Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Suji DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young, discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 391, being recorded on the 25th of August, 2021, with special guest Nikhil Vimal. I'm Sujit, and on Team Sydney, we have Kale, Cynthia, Evan, and our special guest, Nikhil, who we're going to get to in just a minute. But before that, we have maybe one or two items in the news section today. Who wants to cover that? Cynthia, I think you put something in there.
Did. And this is a really complicated one, so I'm going to just try to touch the fundamentals of what it's about. Recently, we were able to complete some genomics testing on the International Space Station with an HPE Spaceborne Computer-2 and Azure. And when you think about space, like, there's a lot of just physical constraints of what a computer can and cannot do. And when thinking of, like, bringing a computer into space, so historically, there has just been, like, a lot of restrictions on what the computer can do and cannot do. And of course, we're always trying to see, like, what are all the other places that Azure can go to? And there's a whole Azure space team, and there's also a whole effort around Azure Orbital. But the gist of this endeavor is that we're actually able to run Linux container hosting Python workload in space. And then we're also able to leverage other technologies like GitHub CodeSpaces and also ARM templates. And a number of other Azure cool things to simulate first the latency on Earth of what it would be in space and do some of PLC experimenting when we are actually in space.
I'm hoping this means we can actually broadcast the Azure podcast in space and International Space Station can listen to this, but just kidding.
Oh, we have somebody from the space station on the, you know, on the call, like Nicholas. But Cynthia, you did a great job explaining that, by the way. I understood it, so, you know, good job. I don't think there's any other news, right? I think this is it. Evan, anything from your side? Oh, you were on vacation,
I'm ready to go back on vacation.
you came with a blank slate.
I was going to say, there's a bunch of services that are going to be retiring soon or has a retirement timeline that all came out on Azure updates, but we'll probably just, I don't know how we can consolidate that, but there's a lot of different services keep an eye out.
I believe there is a VM type also. I think the NVIDIA, one of the NVIDIA SKUs is being retired, the Overlings.
We'll put those on the site, just sort of a pointer to everything so people can find it.
All right, so let's get this show with Nikhil. Nikhil, thanks so much for joining us. Nikhil actually reached out to us on, reached out to me on LinkedIn, I think, right, Nikhil? So thank you for doing that.
Yep.
He's with a partner organization, and we do like to get Microsoft partners on the show from time to time. And he's got some really interesting use cases that his company takes advantage of in Azure. And so we thought we'd get him on to share those use cases so that others can also benefit from those experiences. So Nikhil, go ahead and introduce yourself, introduce your company, and tell us kind of just at a high level what you know what kind of products you guys build, and we'll take it from there.
Awesome, yeah, thanks so much. And no, it's just I've been a fan of the show for a bit, especially in the partner ecosystem. A lot of the stuff that we see is from other partners, but seeing stuff from people directly at Microsoft and things like that, there's so many different perspectives to explore in the community here. So I've been a fan of this one. I've been listening and thought, if I can offer some value to it, that would be a cool opportunity. I think there's some cool topics to touch on today. So, I'm Nikhil Vimal. I'm the head of operations and consulting partner at a company called ChatMode at chatmode.io. We do primarily enterprise and mid-market deployments and professional services for AI projects using, you know, Microsoft Suite, Azure, Power Platform, a few things like that. And that's primarily what I'd love to talk about today, is that we've been breaking and stress testing, you know, different Microsoft products for different projects in many different ways now since, I guess, early 2020. So really, like, right around the pandemic started is when we started, you know, we got a little bit more time to focus on not just, you know, projects, but also doing research as well. And we've discovered some really cool things, and I think they're worth talking about, and I think they're worth, you know, bringing up, you know, in different ways, as you mentioned, Sujeet, in different use cases and different different contexts here. So I'd love to see where this conversation goes, and I'd love to share some of my findings. But it definitely really sits in that, like, Azure, you know, AI framework that Microsoft has set up now. So yeah, it's an honor to be here.
Thank you. And, you know, I know everyone talks about AI a lot these days, mm-hmm. right? I mean, of course, you get visions of all these movies and whatnot. And but realistically, you know, what are some of the real things you're seeing on the ground when it comes to AI? Like, what's the what are some of the really cool use cases that actually make practical sense today and are not just science fiction?
Sure. And this one actually comes at an interesting, like, impasse even for us as a company right now, because we've been thinking a lot about the way of presenting AI, like, in general, doing webinars, doing content, things like that. And, you know, one thing that we've really discovered is that it's not really that scary, because, you know, there really is such a maturity that you have to follow in the AI ecosystem, different models for different use cases that you're going to try to break. And I just wanted to, like, add a disclaimer, because I think it's funny how many you have to, like, wonder how many people, like, you know, have unrealistic expectations. Or that was definitely, like, a curiosity. And once we got into the space, sure enough, we have all these companies coming to us asking for, like, you know, the crate, like, robotics and things like that, and just these crazy ideas that connect with IoT sensors in the healthcare space, or, you know, something, you know, might as well build a rocket ship with AI or something, right? Like, there's so many different ideas that we've heard and people have been excited about, but you know, who's really funding that? Who's really actually managing those things? So it's been interesting, because one of our, like, most common use cases is just the idea of creating approval processes, like automating those in an internal workplace. We mostly work on the employee experience side of things. And it's really funny, because it's not like we're building, like, artificial intelligent employees or something. There has been, people have approached us about those kind of concepts, but they really just want, like, a simple business process moving first and automated a little bit. And then maybe later that can be the lead up, right? But it's all a lot of, like, approvals or doing, like, or wiring, you know, Microsoft Forms data to train a data set or something like that, which is all really cool and all building up to something, but it's taking time. It's certainly, you know, that's one of those things is we're internally as a company, we're breaking stuff, right? We're trying vision AI and things like that. And we've done some, you know, small, like, pilots and things like that using more complicated parts of the Microsoft ecosystem, like sensors and computer vision. But those projects are still, they haven't really hit critical mass just yet. So the learning here, the big thing that we're realizing is that even with all these resources available, it's about sort of setting up realistic expectations, right? When it comes to how much data you can handle, how many resources can work. Yeah, just a little bit into the insight around that.
That's super interesting around the when you say about, like, it's not there to, like, at least right now, replace humans, you know, right, for things. But I mean, do you see it mostly as, like, optimization or, like, improving experience, like user experience of these flows? Is that really where AI is being used today, as opposed to, like, a replacement for a worker or something like that, you know?
Yeah, and I saw it as, and Microsoft is a big, you know, I've seen them push it around at a few of their keynotes and stuff. It's the idea of, like, that customer experience, which I think is a mixture of, like, employee experience empowered by AI that makes a better, like, end user experience as well. And I think that model is, like, that's for, at least from a business standpoint, that's what rationalizes, you know, why even companies are building AI software now, because it definitely works as a solid companion. Now, I will say I've seen people use Azure for virtual avatars. I've seen them use it for robotics purposes and different, like, micro machinery type stuff. It's definitely, like, I think that replacement idea is just, that's out of this world. It is something people are consistently afraid of, but I think that one is still, once you get into it and once you realize how much intelligence that needs, it's just insane. And like I said, like Azure AI stress testing is already a whole different world, but just imagining like millions of data sets trying to move, you know, in tandem in a second, and all these models with vision and machine learning. We're not there yet where we have, you know, robots sitting at desks and, you know, looking human, or being able to be in the warehouse 1 minute and be in the office another minute. It's sort of like it's such a crazy template that we have to do so. And I'm really happy that there's all these like studies and all the like Turing, you know, models that Microsoft has been trying. It's a great, you know, stepping stone, but it's still like, it's pretty funny. That is what people are afraid of, but they really don't realize what's even behind all of that and how hard that is to spin up.
You said something there that caught my attention. You said talking about stress testing the models. And I was hoping you could elaborate on that a little bit, because when I think about stress testing, it's sort of in the traditional, you know, I put more scale, I put more load on my system. But when you talk about AI, there could also be the aspect of, well, what if I, you know, sort of push it with, you know, edge cases in terms of whatever you're trying to analyze. What do you, you know, when you mention that, what are you talking about?
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's stress testing in a couple of ways. In that particular context, I was just thinking of like, when there's a lot of people that are interacting with the AI at once, that's definitely like those high volume, you know, models that need to track things like really fast. And if there's a lot of, you know, it's like a example would be like a chatbot on a website, right? Like the chances of failure just go way up, and being able to predict that is definitely much harder. And there's a whole industry out there that's literally dedicated to, you know, conversation design and making your chatbot like work when it fails. But where's AI useful if it's like consistently being overloaded, just because of like the lack of finding out stress testing. So it's, or lack of finding out like the edge cases early enough. So it really is about putting things in like a box and doing a little bit of packaging and containment when you're building these things out. And again, that comes with realistic expectations, whether for a business case or, you know, who the like end user is. And, you know, we've explored a lot of different ways that AI can work with data that's, you know, cached with microservices and elements that, you know, have like different load balancers set up, right, using an Azure backend. But it's still like there still feels like there's a lot of uncharted territory, because our stuff doesn't get really high volume. It's like I said, it's more for like the backend use cases, which have a pretty controlled people. You know, we can guess how much people are going to use it day to day. But let's say we gave this AI to like a million people in one night, right? Like what that would look like yet. It's a scary thought. There's a lot of scalable ways to approach it, but it's also like, you know, shoot, how much does machine, you know, applied learning have to interact with cognitive services and things like that. And piecing those things together, there's still, it's just a consistent, like, it seems like a consistent, you know, optimization fight that has to keep going. So I'll stop rambling there for a second. I see some hands up.
Yeah, you know, it was a few weeks ago now, we had April Dunham on the show. You know, she's like the power guru, so to speak. And she talked about Power Automate, you know, which kind of speaks to what you're talking about, automating some of these processes. But how do you include AI into that? I guess that's, I'm not able to connect the picture or machine learning or whatever it is. Like, how do you really improve that process using AI techniques?
Yeah, so I'll say from where I'm coming from, particularly there's like, I've done a lot of work in the chatbot space a little bit, or like we have done a lot of work in the chatbot market, I guess now, which is really across a lot of verticals. And that one, Lewis.ai actually proves to be an incredible resource that can be coupled with Power Automate that can, and also Power Virtual Agents, which is, I guess, the whole chatbot side, to do that natural language understanding, to do different breakdowns. But another interesting tool that I've seen really popping up, it definitely still has to, you know, some maturity. I can tell there's different things in preview and such, is AI Builder for the Power Platform. I don't know if that was talked about on that episode a couple of weeks ago, but I've been playing around with it. And that one particularly, it's back-ended by cognitive services and has a lot of like, you know, different ways to do keyword extraction, category classification, prediction modeling. But it's actually like it's the low code, you know, no code type model there, where a lot of it can be done by somebody to automate those business processes. So it is getting a little bit easier. But I think with Power Automate, it's more like, you know, we've like literally done things where we have to like call custom endpoints, right, to call a model and things like, when it gets to, it's again, when it hits a certain scale, or when it hits a level of certain complexity where you're starting to sort of jerry rig, like, you know, computer vision with NLU. We have done that before. That's where you have to, you know, like we're just straight up, you know, making API and endpoint calls. There's some Azure connectors as well. I haven't played with them as much. Like we've gone a more traditional route, but that can also connect certain resources and different things like that, data points as well. So, but we're also seeing a way that it's also like even consolidating into the Power Platform where all that is built on top of Azure, but you won't have to touch Azure, right? So that's something interesting that I'm still exploring even right now. But yeah, the way we're doing it is it's really like, you know, these are like full and, you know, microservices set up with APIs and things like that. And then we're calling them from, you know, Power Automate to, you know, run different functions, building out the conditions, building out the queries, and then, being able to automate some of the more complex ID like processes.
Okay, I'm curious, when you have different conversations with your customers, is there a clear delineation between machine learning and artificial intelligence, or are they kind of just used interchangeably now?
Definitely interchangeable. That's another thing that's like, you know, I'm someone who comes from a, you know, software engineering background. So for me, like, you know, all these little pieces are very important. But we talk to even IT directors that don't quite know the extent of how different that can be under the Azure suite. So that has been an interest. There definitely is a disconnect. It's when we have to try to connect. But again, that's where that, like, it's not without building out a whole level of maturity and explaining the differences and having all these wacky diagrams and things like that. But, you know, I guess you got to do what you got to do when it comes to this. But in the end, you know, they believe in both, but it needs to be mapped out in such a way, even though Microsoft has it everywhere, it's still like we need to go in and do a little bit of handholding just because of how in-depth, you know, applied learning versus cognitive services versus infrastructure just gets. So, yeah.
What, you know, so you talk about sort of, I like your point about sort of setting realistic expectations for the technology and understanding what you're trying to do. One of the areas that I'm seeing, like, actually, I just came back from vacation. We were joking about it earlier in the call. Came back from vacation today, and one of the emails that was sitting in my inbox was from Microsoft 365 saying, hey, you know, you got these meetings on your calendar today. Here's some docs that are related to that, right? You might want to check out, which as someone who, you know, literally am walking into meetings having not, you know, read my email, that's a really good, you know, that's a good example of something that I get real world use out of. I got to think that there's other scenarios like that, that companies like you are exploring. Can you give us some examples of things that you see people doing out in the real world with it?
Sure. Yeah. One interesting one that I've seen is and we've messed around with this one, is it's like similar to what you're talking about, where you get like documents just in time before a meeting or something like that, but they might still be like pages and pages of stuff that you'll have to read through. So an interesting one, I don't think it's like really even people have really seen the potential, but the idea of having like computer vision or OCR, like document reading, right? And then being able to compile key points from like 10 page documents. Oddly enough, there is like some need for that, because people are even like, we're all very good skimmers, you know, that's what, you know, I think we as humans all can like do a pretty good job, but there's still such an easy way to miss things. And it's very evident that like this little shortcut could be pretty game changing. So that's one really cool one that I've seen with specifically with the computer vision side of Azure. The other big ones that I've seen, I would say that the artificial intelligence, you know, chatbot, conversational AI use case, not really voice yet, although I will be curious to see if there'll be some, some improvements of that in the future. The idea of being able to type to a chatbot to do like an advanced search query, just using like a sentence, like a conversation, like, oh, can you tell me what happened last week with this client, and getting, you know, a bunch of data around that. I think that's a really cool use case that's coming up. And that's like we've done, you know, piles where we've been able to extract data from even like external third-party resources, right? So it doesn't even have to be like a Word document. It can search documents in another platform, but bring it into Microsoft, right? Into Microsoft Teams, or into a chatbot that lives in a portal or something, depending on how custom it gets. So, and then I think the other things too are data reporting, like report generation is, that's been crazy. That's been like the idea of having AI that can very quickly, you know, go through, you know, do an advanced query in Power BI, email a bunch of people, email, like do an approval process, right? Where maybe it goes to one person, they have to approve it, and then it automatically can be sent out to the right people in the organization. That's not like the craziest AI type stuff. It's the AI that does the you know, the generation of the report, or puts it together into an automatic, you know, like a PowerPoint or something like that. And then, but then, it, you know, uses Power Automate or something, right, to run that approval process and to get it to the right people. And, you know, even like thinking about that, I wasn't able to even do this on that use case, but I was thinking about it where, if I could actually respond to an AI, you know, respond to that email where the report generation came in, tell it what was wrong, and it goes and generates me a new one. I haven't like actually built that out yet, but I think it is possible with some of the resources available. And so things like that, it all starts with like these very, they sound like simple automations, but then, you know, as you want more, as you want more presentation value, as you want more concise data points and things put together in the right place, that's where AI is doing, and machine learning, frankly, is doing a, you know, tremendous job of, it makes a little bit of assumptions, but it also can take those commands and you know, instantly spit you out something new. And I can talk about RPA all day as well, but that feeds that data into the AI as well. And that can offer a lot of value from legacy software that, you know, we might be connecting to. And yeah, a lot of different ways to put it around.
Yeah, you just said the three words, letters I was going to ask you about, which is RPA. We've heard a lot about, you know, robotic process automation. I think that's what it stands for. And mm-hmm. I'm just curious, you know, how does that fit into the whole AI model? Is that what you just described earlier, or is that something different?
Yeah, so it's RPA is a pretty interesting one because on its own, it's already a very powerful resource of automation. And it doesn't, we've actually, you know, used it in a couple of ways. So first, we've used it in a sense where, you know, there's like a communication with a chatbot. And then the natural language understanding, like Lewis or whatever we have backending it, recognizes like, hey, you said this word, we're going to run an RPA query and bring it back, right? So that's one thing that we've done where it would be able to say, you know, like, you could literally tell a chatbot to run the RPA for you in a certain sequence or run one of the different models. And
Nikhil, yeah. When you say run the RPA, what does that mean? Can you just elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, like executing a query in Power Automate Desktop.
That's what you mean.
Yeah, so like
it's literally it's going to run an entire process, a business process, so to speak, at that point in time.
Yep, and it might either return data or tell that it's, you know, or say like task successfully completed. That's mostly what we've been working on in terms of RPA. We have used other platforms like UiPath and things like that that we've connected to something like Power Automate before, but now it's really becoming Power Automate Desktop, which is the de facto tool. The other side of it is actually just doing like quick data extraction from legacy software. You know, there's a gray area with using RPA to scan websites, but you know, I suppose there is, you know, ways to do that as well where you can have it run and it can bring you back a lot of data, and that data you know, automatically can just be fed into AI models, right? Rather than having to go and copy and pasting or doing like some, you know, funky stuff, it can you know, neatly, you know, run different queries. And what I saw a school example, right, where like RPA can automatically click like load more, like if there's a website with a lot of like pagination, right? It's like that's like the cool idea though, right? So you don't have to sit there and click. It's just it'll do that all in 30 seconds, and then you have all that data that you can use to train an AI model, and it could save you just a ton of, because that's sometimes the hardest part, right, is the data sets, and we haven't even scratched the surface, I think, judging by what kind of, you know, tests that Microsoft is running and other major companies are running out there. We still have so much we can collect and use, but putting that together and figuring out, you know, the fastest way to get it in the first place and automatically feeding it in, that's going to be a superpower as time goes on.
Yeah, I'm curious. You've been talking a lot about like things where humans are, you know, initiating a process or initiating something that it's going to use AI for. I'm curious, like on the machine-to-machine ones, where we have a machine doing something and then we have something watching that, you know, the output of that potentially, and maybe even within constraints adjusting things or making changes, obviously informing a human, but it's less of a human like saying, hey, go do this thing. It's more about like monitoring and like reactive. I'm wondering, like, do you get into any of that? Is that something that's happening right now?
Yeah, that one. So there's the hard part with that one is the level of like risk that might be involved, right? Especially with governance and cybersecurity and just where everything is today. The idea of having background processes to do artificial like machine learning queries or even something like RPA queries, it's just like it's definitely something that can work, and there's definitely different ways to do it. But you know, having something that like, let's say we just turn it on and it runs in the background all the time and it's automatically collecting reports and then sending it out or doing something along that nature where it's where, you know, a human is receiving something. There's always just, you know, concerns of like, am I one day going to wake up to like an email inbox of like 500 emails because it accidentally like picked up on something multiple times. Like, it's just having that supervision and making sure we're not overloading any circuits, right? That's a very genuine concern. And I'm only very concerned about it because I've created like very basic automations in Power Automate before, where we've had Lewis, you know, it's like Lewis picking something up from Outlook. And, you know, the next thing I know, there's just, oh gosh, I don't even know how many emails were in my inbox.
I've had those email storms come into my mailbox. not from you, in all fairness, I've had them.
But yeah, it's actually pretty easy to just have it, you know, like, I mean, it's literal, right? It looks at your stuff. It says, okay, you told me to find this and message you every time we found this in like a document or in an email thread or something like that. And lo and behold, that was actually 1,000 times that it found it in that particular instance. So there's things like that, you know, and I will say the CIOs and CTOs of today are getting very privy to mistakes that artificial intelligence can make, which is great. And, you know, where machine learning can go wrong, where computer vision can go wrong. The idea of AI and bias is something I've explored a lot. And all of that is just like, it's fueling this, like, we need the AI to be supervised. And that's like the methodology that we live behind mostly. But I've certainly tried different ways to have it do something more machine to machine. It's just production ready. Those things still need to be really, really like airtight. And there's so much governance and stuff in between.
What about Teams? And obviously that's a tool that a lot of us use. And it seems like that would be a good spot to inject some automation of some sort, right? What kind of use cases can you talk about in that area?
Sure. So this one, we kind of got started as like, I would say like a team shop actually in the ecosystem. Now we're definitely more AI and agnostic across platforms and things like that. But particularly with Teams, that one was like, we called it sort of like, it could with AI, with like something like conversational AI and natural language understanding. You know, we had this vision that there's going to be, you know, chatbots for different departments and things like that. Still very possible on that vision. It's just, you know, it's taking some time to get there. But the idea was having, you know, that like, I think we were talking about it earlier, Kale, you mentioned it, like the idea of having not necessarily a replacement, but like a companion, right? Someone who could literally, like, you won't feel weird talking to them all day, but they're your assistant, right? Your digital assistant doing mundane background tasks, scheduling meetings, all with you, either, you know, leaving like hopefully one day we'll have voice stuff, right? Or just, you know, typing it out, right? Like, can you schedule this meeting at this time and use the same link across all of them, right? We've explored those use cases. We've built them in before. There's a lot of different ways that that I've personally experimented with it, but the goal was, you know, to have that was sort of like the vision. And I know that a lot of the, there was even like Slack previously had people literally building out these same visions as well. It wasn't quite taking off back then. It did for some chatbots, but it wasn't really great back then. And it still isn't really quite there now. I think because people just don't understand the level of complexity it can get to. I think it's a lot of education. I think Teams itself, like, we have a lot of control with what we can do with Azure Bot Services and Cognitive Services and how we can deploy that to Teams. Like, there really isn't, you know, sky's the limit. It's, you know, both, you know, it's all in the Microsoft box. So things can work pretty well. It's just being able to justify those right now and being able to, they are big projects, right? As your company grows, as your organization grows, you know, models will grow, where it's pulling from will grow. I'll say another very common use case is just bringing a lot of outside stuff into Microsoft Teams. So being able to automatically, you know, having like natural language understanding understand that you're asking for something that's from another software, right? From like some IT ticketing software based on your request. It makes that decision. It runs RPA or something on that, brings that data back, neatly organizes in a report, and then you have it all in Teams. But you know, those use cases are definitely like, we're seeing them more and more. I think they're, you know, I'm even seeing content now online that's proving that. But I think it's also just that level of some people don't even realize that that's possible yet. And there's still plenty of education, and I'll be excited to explore those more as more companies become more familiar with what can be done with that kind of interface.
That's great.
As someone who is interested in exploring like something to automate, what are places to look first, and what tools should they explore first? Evan has
let me jump in because I was literally doing this morning. Sorry to jump in, Nikhil, but this is like I just was made some changes over my vacation. Yes, I did a little bit of fun work over my vacation, but I added the YouTube link to the podcast feed that we have through Power Automate. And like Sujeet, you'd asked me to do this a long time ago, and I had just never gotten around to it. I had the RSS feed, but like, I mean, is that the classic example where you tell people to start, Nikhil, or is it like shoot bigger, shoot smaller? Like, I mean, it felt achievable to me, but I still struggled with it a little bit.
It's start in the middle, I guess, is like the way I should say it. It's hard because if it's too basic, people are like, okay, why are we using automation and AI in the first place, right? And if it's too big, it's like, well, that sounds like, you know, an expense that we don't need to have this year. So it's one of those things that's how I have to face it as sort of a Microsoft partner every day. And it's really interesting too that you're like bringing up like the easiness of it, because it really is like, now that I think about it more and more, even within the partner ecosystem itself, depending on what verticals you cover, depending on what things, you know, when we have to work with other partners on projects or something like that, it's having to explain to a lot of different stakeholders in a lot of different languages what's possible and what's achievable. And so the resources are, I can jump into them even. Like it's sometimes it's just literally like the Microsoft blog is incredible with around AI. I think it's the Azure AI blog specifically, which looks at all the Turing stuff. Or no, Microsoft Research, that's who it does. That's who does primarily that. So being able to show like that there is like the sky is the limit, but in a very cool way, like, oh, it played chess today, so great. You know, now it's the smartest thing we've ever seen, right? But it's also seeing it in the light of like, you know, that's always gonna be fun. But it's also bringing it back down to earth, right? And showing like, all right, this is what like common use cases and common industries, all the case studies on Microsoft's system are great. We even show those, and that's still usually too much. Then sometimes you have to convince IT. And the cool part, I think, like the GitHub, you know, Microsoft like world, I guess. Maybe it is its own ecosystem or something. That's been incredible lately, actually, just from an IT standpoint, to show that like, hey, there's templates we can use. There's different like Python for AI, right? There's all these different things that literally help you deploy better apps with Azure and better apps on a Microsoft environment. Sometimes it's as simple as going there, right? And just showing like the right technical people that, you know, there are scalable infrastructures that are being battle tested by the company that built them. Do not fear. There is that focus. So, and then at the end, sometimes it's just building out those like basic prototypes and having to, you know, literally show a clean demo or something like that. So the resources, they come out in a lot of different ways, but it's usually like, it starts with the classic, like show us some reports, show us why it's growing, show us where it's useful, case studies. And then it gets a little bit more like you have to like play around with it, right? Sometimes it's like sending a YouTube video where they can see it in person. Sometimes it's just being able to create like a basic flow and showing that it's, you know, this like Power Automate is calling Azure and doing this whole thing. And then also just showing like the development resources behind it. Oddly useful, and it's even powerful for us, but even just talking to other partners who are building products, you know, as we are, maybe just for different sectors or, you know, maybe a little more simple, we can show them that, hey, there is like AI stuff ready though. And that, you know, you might have to dig a little bit on GitHub to find it, but it works in multiple different languages. There's like frameworks, there's resources. So it's like, it's showing that there's like the possibilities and there's also the resources to achieve the possibilities, right? I think that's a little bit of the two-parter there. And it's, that's been pretty uniform, I would say. But like I said, just depending on industries and context and all that too.
But in terms of the tool set, I guess, Power Automate Desktop, I think, is the place where some people might want to start and just to get their hands dirty, so to speak.
I think even better than that, I don't know if it's like ready for it yet. I think it is, but it would be AI Builder, actually. I think could be like the simplest way. If I was just like wanting to start with a basic process flow, I think that will be what a lot of people will be drawn to. I think frankly, Power Automate too. But I'm curious, like in terms of just allowing people to see more of like AI in its like purest form, where you can see data sets and live learning. That's one thing. Power Automate, you know, there's just a ton of possibilities. It's not all AI, right? So I think it'll have a little bit of different, you know, context depending on who's going into it. But I would say that, and Power Automate Desktop, I hope it gets a little easier. It still has, I think it's still considered beta or just very early general access. So it has a lot of bugs. It has a lot of things that it needs to be fixed, but it certainly does feel, I mean, that's like RPA, which sounds like that's automation for you, I guess. Right. In theory, it could be really good as well. But yeah, definitely before jumping into some of the broader Azure AI concepts, I think AI Builder will be the platform where you can start with that low code, no code, ideation process.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Nico. This has been a wealth of information, and you shared a lot of perspective with us on a topic that at least I didn't know much about. So appreciate you sharing all of that.
Yeah, no problem at all.
If you have any links and resources you'd like to share with our listeners, please feel free to send them over to me, and we'll add them along with the recording of the show.
Sure.
And Evan, sorry, you wanted to say something about?
Yeah, I was gonna say I was gonna reiterate your thanks, then also remind the rest of the audience. Nikhil, you can speak to it at this point. This wasn't a painful experience.
No,
we watched your face during this. There wasn't lots of pain, and so if we've got other subscribers that are interested in coming on, talk about whatever topic around in the Azure world, we'd love to have them on. So spread the word to anybody, pass it on to your friends, right? All that kind of stuff as well. And again, if you don't believe me and you're just listening to the audio, go watch the video. He was smiling for the whole show.
It was a pleasure. It was an absolute pleasure. I had a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thanks, folks.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.